And welcome into another edition of the B-Squared Podcast. It is Tuesday, April 18th as we record. And even though last year the Cubs started out 25-6 and all was right in Cubland, this year they are 6-7 to start the year through 13 games. He's Brian Beto. I'm Jordan Bernfield. So obviously because the Cubs are under 500 and they've played 13 games, they should fold up the shop, fire everyone, right?
Well, bottom line is that it's 6:30 here, Central Standard Time on a Tuesday in Chicago, and I'm getting ready to watch the only winning sports franchise in Chicago. That would be the Chicago Bulls. The Chicago Cubs stink. The Chicago Blackhawks are done. It's time to fold up shop, fully invest in Garpax and the Bulls over the Celtics in six games. That's what it comes down to because the Cubs are done.
Beto, you didn't tell me you went to happy hour before this podcast.
Happy hour, you know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Happy hour some places in the country starts at 9 a.m.
Yeah. So. Oh, man. I mean, listen, it's funny, though, that because they've lost four in a row as we record, that there are people who are acting really concerned about the start of the year. I will say this. The bullpen has been pretty bad to start the season. But I'm not worried about the offense. I'm not worried about the starting pitching. And I'm not really worried about the defense. I am a little bit concerned about the relief pitching. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. I mean, the bullpen's been pretty awful. And that was something going into the year that I think we all legitimately felt was going to be a question, other than Wade Davis and maybe Edwards and maybe Montgomery, although Mike hasn't looked very good at this point. I think we all were kind of questioning, is Pedro Strop going to rebound this year? He's looked terrible. Is Hector Rondon going to rebound this year? He hasn't looked real good yet. There are questions about this bullpen, but if you're asking me 13 games in, am I worried about the team? The answer is no.
No, you're exactly right in a lot of your points there. And I will disclose the fact that I've been irrationally angry.
Oh, well, that I would expect no less from you or me.
So we've talked a lot about irrational anger. It kicked off earlier last year. Remember when the Cubs lost a couple of Sunday games against the Rockies?
Yes.
And the Braves?
Tyler Chatwood. I was at that
Tyler
game.
Tyler Chatwood, and then they lost to the Braves in extra innings after coming back to tie it earlier on in the year.
Yep.
And I was irrationally angry. So last night, I decided, you know what? They've lost three in a row. There's going to be no good done by me sitting down and watching this Cubs game, because if they win, I'm going to be like, well, they should have won. But if they lose, I'm going to continue to be angry. So Sarah and I, my wife, rented a movie, and we're like, we're just going to watch a movie.
Look at you.
Zen, like Phil Jackson style. And we're going to watch this. We're going to watch the movie and not worry about the game. Obviously, I had to check the score throughout the game. But like, you're right, though. It bothers me. And then I remember checking later and seeing that Montgomery gave up multiple runs. And I'm like, come on, man. Like,
well, you know, it's funny that you were watching a movie. So Deanna, my fiance, and I were out at an event last night, and after the event ended, it was around 8:15-ish, 8:30, I hadn't seen what was going on at the game. So now I check the score, and I see that it's 3-3. And then when we get home, you know, it takes 15, 20 minutes to walk home from the event. Now it's 4-3 Milwaukee, because apparently the Cubs can't get Jet Bandy out. So now...
It's unbelievable. Go ahead.
I mean, is Jet Bandy the new Kirk Nieuwenhuis?
Dude, the guy...
He might be.
He's literally Johnny Bench and Ivan Rodriguez combined.
He's Robin Yount.
Yeah.
Like,
correct.
What's going on here? So now I'm kind of irrationally angry about that. And then I was like, you know, it's okay. I'm going to watch the Blackhawks game. I'm sure they're going to rebound tonight. And then they're up 2-0. And then they blow the game and lose. And now they're going to be done. So then I see on my phone that the Cubs lost 6-3. And now I'm just like, well, this was a hell of a night.
That's why you got to watch the Bulls. That's why you got to watch the Bulls. But
Jaren Grant will solve my problems.
Garpax, the key to all issues. God, that's a sentence I would never thought I'd say. But to get back to the Cubs bullpen point, I mean, you're right. That was clearly like the team doesn't have weaknesses in theory. If you were going to pick a spot where you think that they might improve throughout the year, yeah, the bullpen probably it. I think they have a lot of depth in it. I think they're trying to carve out roles still, and I thought that was, regardless if they were good or bad, I thought it was going to take some time. I think Uehara hasn't been very good in high-leverage situations. Wade Davis, like you mentioned, has been really, really good. Carl Edwards just came off the bereavement list. There's, I think they kind of look at him as like that eighth inning guy. Strope's like terrible.
Carl, so good to see you. Sorry, so I just had to say that.
Carl, so good to see you. Like, I don't know if you watch Walking Dead, but it's another thing where I have to say Carl. But
I don't see that. Or I've never seen that, so I don't
Billy
know.
Yeah. I can't say the word Carl without thinking those two things. But I think he's going to be a nice fixture in the bullpen for years. Is, you know, that's nothing new to think about. But the Montgomery things bothered me a little bit, even though if you remember when he first came over from Seattle, he really struggled.
Yeah, didn't he give up a 3-run homer in his first game against the Brewers Milwaukee, in Milwaukee? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was in Milwaukee. So I literally was like, "What?" Thinking the same thing, but I think he'll be okay. It's just, you're right, the bullpen's really struggled, and there's certainly question marks. And I think I like to see, even though Rondon against Pittsburgh, I guess technically gave up a few runs, he got a lot of weak contact with some bad luck and a bad throw by Hayward. So hopefully he's on the way up. But
have you been disappointed in the defense so far? Because
yes,
have too, and okay, so I'm not worried that it's going to be bad.
Yes, that is my number one frustration out of it all, solely because I know in theory they're the best defensive team in the league, and they should be able to replicate what they did a year ago to an extent from the defensive standpoint. And there's just been some lackadaisical plays, and you're right, it has bothered me. And I remember thinking to myself, like, am I just being overly critical? Am I reading too much into this? Which I'm sure over the course of the season, it'll right itself. But I remember thinking early on, yes, I'm not overly thrilled with some of the defensive plays that I've seen.
Okay, so then it's not just me, because I feel like, first of all, people have to stop with this annoying narrative that every time Kyle Schwarber doesn't get to a ball or there's a difficult play at the wall, he doesn't catch it, people are like, well, Schwarber sucks at defense. Schwarber hasn't made one bad play yet.
Agreed.
I don't think. He's been totally fine.
He's
and so,
better than Soler.
Yes. So,
metrics, so it's like, what's the problem? That's not the issue
yes,
at all.
Yes, and the ball that hit off his glove at the wall in left field is a difficult play to make. It would have been nice if he had caught it. Yes. Did he? I mean, it is what it is that he didn't catch it. I don't blame him for that at all. And people need to get off the Twitter high horse with the Kyle Schwarber sucks at defense narrative. I don't think it's true.
Down to two plays against the Mets in the NLCS.
Yes. As a rookie.
The Cubs, and they're like, oh, he's so bad defensively. If you watched all year and looked at some of the numbers, you're right. He's never going to win a gold glove in left field, but he's fine out there, and he's probably better than, besides the arm, than what we saw in Soler. So I'm totally on board.
Okay. So here's my next preaching point, okay? Addison Russell has been pretty shaky with the throws from short so far this year. Now, he is getting to the ball. He has great range. I think he's a great shortstop. I'm not trying to complain about Addison Russell. I'm just saying that I have noticed that he has made some bad throws so far this season. Additionally, I feel like Javi Baez, even though he makes a few plays that are just insanely amazing, has had a couple of lax plays. Same thing is true with Wilson Contreras, even though he's made some great plays. I mean, that throw that he made on the drop third strike in the ninth inning a few days ago was terrible, you know, which cost them the second run. I mean, those kind of plays, like, I don't think it's being unfair to point out that those are plays that those guys know they have to make. They're better than that. They are better players than that. And I get that physical errors will happen, but like that Contreras play was just a bad effort to me. I felt like that's a play he can't throw that ball away, and he did. So
I agree.
I feel like they are a great defensive team because they have great defensive players. So I don't mind if somebody makes a great effort and can't make a play, because I feel like most of the time the Cubs are going to get to balls and make plays that most teams are not going to make. But like when I'm seeing Jason Hayward make a throwing error or I see Wilson Contreras throw a ball away, it's like, come on. Like, this team is better than that.
I totally agree. And then I look at, remember there was a play a couple of days ago, even when Zobris kind of screwed up a double play ball.
Yes. And there was the one in St. Louis that it cost John Lackey a couple runs.
Yeah, exactly. And here, listen, like we know that this is likely going to be righted, and that's a reason to remain positive.
Totally first world problems.
Yeah, it's not going to be something that lingers throughout the course of the year. But however, it's a way to look at it. Is it positive or negative? Because negatively, you look at it this way and being like, hey, like you're right, they haven't played that well and they need to do better. But positively, you don't think it's sustainable, and I don't. So, but there's been a few situations where you're right. They get to some great plays, and then there was some barrel contact stat that came out today and talking about how the Cubs really do a good job of, which we knew, of route running when the balls hit off the barrel and taking away hits. While that is true, and they've done some of that already this year, still there's been a few plays that have really proved costly where they should have made the play, and that includes obviously the Contreras play, the Zobrist play, and then I play a couple of nights ago where they had a one run and then there was not even a drop third strike. There was a ground ball back to the pitcher. So it's like there's been a few different situations where you've been a little flustered, to say the least, with what they've done on the defensive end.
Anything that concerns you from the starting pitching so far? Because, I mean, Hendricks has been kind of shaky so far, but I'm not really worried about him. Lester's looked really good to me. Jake's looked really good to me. Brett Anderson's looked really good so far, at least as we record through two starts. Lackey, you know, kind of we know what he is. I mean, he's going to have starts like he had on Monday night, and he's going to have starts where he gives up 3-4 runs. I think that's just kind of what John Lackey is these days. So I feel like from a starting pitching perspective, it's been kind of what I expected, maybe with a little bit better performance from Brett Anderson.
Yeah, I also agree with you there. I think Lackey, if you remember last year, got off to a slower start early in games, which is what he has done this year, where he's got off to really slow starts and sometimes he settles in. And let's face it, John Lackey's at the tail end of his career, of an excellent career, and it's not expecting him to be any more than really a four starter at this point in his career. So I think he's, you know, he'll get a little bit better. The Brewers had a good approach against him last night, attacking him early, know that he really hits the zone. He doesn't like to walk people and he's aggressive regardless of the situation. So I think Brett Anderson's a guy that the Cubs, you know, bet on upside and they've seen, you know, the benefits and the reaps of the rewards so far, because when he's on and he's healthy, he is a really good pitcher. And Kyle Hendricks, you know, nobody was expecting him to duplicate what he did last year from leading the majors in ERA. But it'll get better as time goes on. But I agree with you. Lester's been great. I know Arrieta's numbers weren't all that great against Pittsburgh the other day, but I thought he pitched pretty well. The weather element.
Right, it was crazy, yeah.
But I really liked what I've seen from Arrieta so far. So the starting rotation really doesn't bother me. I think where the offense, we've had a couple of underachieving performances. But I don't think those things are sustainable. And as we see those numbers kind of revert back to the mean and up to the mean, you're going to start to see more wins as a result.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're exactly right regarding the offense. I mean, who are you going to worry about? You're going to worry about Kyle Schwarber? I'm not. You're going to worry about Chris Bryant? I'm not. You're going to worry about Anthony Rizzo? I mean, I have bigger things to worry about than those guys hitting. And again, I mean, somebody needs to cue the small sample size song, because I think that's what we've seen so far. The other thing, Brian, and I know that, again, it's a small sample size here, but I've been pretty impressed with what I've seen from Jason Hayward. Has it hit in six straight games as we record this podcast? And it's not just the results, but it's that when he comes to the plate, you're not expecting the guaranteed ground out to second. He looks far more comfortable at the plate, and I've even noticed, and tell me if you feel the same way, I feel like teams are pitching him a little bit differently because they respect him more at the plate. You know, last year, when he was struggling all season long, and especially once we got to like June, July, once it became very apparent that Jason was having a really tough year, it was just fastball inside every single pitch because they knew he couldn't turn on it. And now, because Jason's making far more consistent hard contact, you're seeing him pitch differently. And to me, that's an encouraging sign.
Yeah, and it's funny about that, because if I'm the opposing pitcher, and don't get me wrong, I don't claim to know more than the pitching coaches in the National League, I would continue until he's able to do it over a long period of time, continuing to pitch him with velocity up and in. He's had a couple of, like early on, he had a couple of bloop hits that inflated his average. But while I say that, at the exact same time, I agree. I think he has looked much more comfortable and much more of a threat than he was at times last year. He's always going to have a high ground ball rate. That's how he's been, even in years where he's had really good offensive years. But at the same time, I think I've been pretty impressed for the most part we've seen from him. And they've slid him down in the order. They kept him pretty much sixth or seventh the entire time. And as a result, I think they're getting a little bit more than what they'd hoped for coming into the year, and hopefully they can get what they thought they were going into last season. So, and again, it's all going to come down to, like we said, the middle of the order. We talked about not being worried about Brian and Rizzo. And do you remember last year how good of a start Fowler and Zobrist got off to?
Yes. Oh, they were so hot at the beginning of last season.
Remember, Brian and Rizzo did not have great starts from a like a batting average standpoint.
Brian was pretty good, but yeah, I mean, Rizzo was really bad early on last year.
On bases low, etc. And they were a little bit late to the party in that regards too. And Zobrist and Fowler really carried that offense early on. So if you're worried about the comparison from this year to last, just know that that's not going to be sustainable for the long term. And that middle of the order is really going to heat up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, last year, Anthony Rizzo really struggled in April and then turned on the Jets and had a phenomenal year and finished, what, fourth in MVP voting? So, you know, ended up having a fantastic season. And I'm certainly not worried about the way that those guys are going to perform. I think that they're going to be really good. You mentioned Koji Uehara before. I think Uehara is interesting to me because there have been times that I've thought he's looked pretty good. He obviously didn't pitch well on Sunday, but I feel like he's going to end up being sort of one of these guys that will fill in nicely. I have not been overly impressed yet with Brian Dunsing, but again, it's a very small sample of work that we've seen from him. I just don't think that he has great stuff. I think he's probably just a guy that you bring in against lefties. But Uehara, you know, he's only throwing like 86, and he's got that kind of sidearm, unorthodox delivery. But, you know, I feel like he could end up being an underrated part of this team. I really do.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it depends. So if you look at Uehara's career, he's never been a high velocity guy, but he still gets a lot of strikeouts. I think the biggest value add for him over the course of his career is looking at his strikeout to walk ratio, and it's been extremely high, like literally one of the highest ever for a Leaf pitcher. His command hasn't been as good as we've seen in the past, and we saw it again over the weekend against the Pirates, and I think that's an area where the Cubs are going to monitor to see if he's able to kind of regain some of that. But you're right, he's kind of that swing man, like a guy that, okay, some of our, in theory, best setup men haven't performed well. Let's slide Koji in there. Or maybe we're down a couple of runs because Rondon and Strope are pitching really well. Let's throw Uehara in there to keep it a two-run deficit. So you're right. I think they're really relying on him to be a workhorse, not overly concerned about taxing his arm for the long term, given his age and short-term contract. But I think that's a guy that if he performs really well this year, that's going to really do wonders for this bullpen.
And Koji Uehara could be Addison Russell's dad. Koji Uehara could be Addison Russell's dad.
Oh, yeah.
Addison Russell's 23. Huh? Koji Uehara is 42.
Yeah. It's like a whole person that can vote older than him. Like,
yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy. I have to say, too, there was, I think, some
Jesse Roscoe, right, at his age?
Oh, my God. Jesse Roscoe when he was still pitching at like 48. I look at a couple of things that are sort of minute, admittedly, but I look at the relationship so far between Contreras and Lester. That seems to be pretty good. It was sort of funny that when we came into the season, all these people were saying, well, you know, How is John Lester going to pitch to another catcher other than David Ross, forgetting that for every other season other than 3 years, John Lester has had to pitch to other catchers besides David Ross? But I feel like Wilson Contreras and Lester have developed over these first few games. And again, everything is small sample size. Take it with a grain of salt. It looks like they're getting more comfortable together. And additionally, we knew that Contreras was going to be able to have that same skill set that David Ross had, where he can control the running game. And I think that's been a good thing to see so far, too.
He's got an excellent arm, and we've seen that even most recently in the last start for Lester. And, you know, it's all about – it's funny because they seem to match up some of these pitchers and catchers based on, you know, demeanor and personality to an extent. Not that I'm overanalyzing that aspect, but I love the fact that Lackey seems to have been paired with Miguel Montero. Lackey's a guy that tends to have a little bit more emotion on the mound, and Montero's a guy that seems to have a little bit less than a Wilson Contreras behind the plate. So, and it seems construed on the other end, and we've heard about, like, oh, even though Ross isn't there with Contreras, that Rizzo's kind of the guy to calm him down. So I really was never overly concerned about that. Yeah, would it be great, the numbers with Ross and the relationship with Ross and Lester was great, but that was an area where I was never overly concerned about, just because of the quality of talent in the player that both Lester and Contreras are.
Okay, so the Cubs, as we record this podcast, finishing up a series against the Milwaukee Brewers, who they've gotten a big heaping spoonful of here early in the season. Then the Cubs will head to Cincinnati, who, incredibly, is still in first place. What's funny about Cincinnati is they've won 8 games right now, and I'm expecting that they're going to end up winning like 65 games. So they've actually won like a high percentage of their games already.
They're going to finish in last place. After the start last year, weren't they undefeated when the Cubs are like lost like a game or two when the Cubs had them in the home opener last year when Addison hit?
Yes, actually. So, yes, funny story about that. A member of my family, who I will not name, I was at a game with this family member in April last year, and they said, oh, the Reds are off to a decent start. They might have a good year. And I was like, they're going to lose 95 games, guaranteed. And they're like, no, I don't know. They might be decent. I was like, no. They're going to lose 95 games, guaranteed. And what did they end up losing, 100 games? I mean, So that was one thing. Not that I know everything by any stretch, but that you could see was going to come. And I think that this Reds team is probably off on its way to 90 to 95 losses again, right?
At least.
Yeah.
They're at least a 90-loss team. Nothing against – I'm not ripping on the Reds, but they just don't have the talent level, at least in my opinion, that any of the other teams in the division do.
This one belongs to the Reds. Okay, so they will go to the Reds. Then they will go to the Pirates, and then they go to Boston for a little 3-game set at Fenway Park. So the schedule, at least for the next 5 games, pretty winnable. I think going to Pittsburgh is still winnable, even though they just got swept by the Pirates. And then I think it should be interesting to see how they look at the end of the month when they take on Boston in Boston. So, all right, Beto, as we finish up this podcast, are you predicting a big winning streak after the 4-game skid, or what are you looking at for the rest of this week?
I like Bulls and 6. Being honest, I like the Bulls to lose tonight, unfortunately, but win in 6 at the United Center. Also, the Cubs are going to sweep this week. Let's be honest.
I'm
here.
Shocked you think that.
I mean, of course I think that. I like the fact that we have, you know, Anderson on the mound tonight. The Brewers, I know they're on a hot stretch. They've won 6 of 7 on the road, but the Cubs are going to get back on the winning track with the wind blowing out tonight. And I hope if you listen to this tomorrow, the Cubs have won this game. Otherwise, I'm going to sound extremely foolish. However, I think we're going to be fine. I just, regardless if we do go undefeated the rest of the way, just calm down. We're fine. They're the best team in the division. You know, the Pirates, the Cardinals are going off to a terrible start. The Pirates just lost their best player for half the season.
Yeah, how about Starling Marte there?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Kills my fantasy team. Absolutely brutal. But
good for the Cubs.
Really, it's more brutal to the Pirates, which is more important than my fantasy team. So
yes.
And the Brewers are, we talked about this earlier. They're not, I wouldn't say they're good, but they're good enough to be annoying within a division. So they're all right. They can score, but don't worry about it. They'll be fine. as a result, Cubs go undefeated the rest of the week.
All right, I'm going to pick the Cubs to win the next two against the Brewers and then take two out of three from the Reds and get themselves back on track, have a pretty good weekend in Cincinnati, and probably have one game where they score at least 10 runs, since that was pretty much every game that they played against the Reds last season. Yeah.
Or that full house like he had last year, three home runs and two doubles.
That was one game. That was honestly one of the most amazing individual performances I think I've ever seen in a baseball game. I mean, that was, wow, that was really good. Okay, so we've gotten that out of the way. How can people find us on Facebook, Brian Beto?
Find us on searching for the B-Squared Show, your source for all Cubs talk all the time. Do that. You'll see our mugs on there, so that's how you can find us on Facebook.
And you can find us on Twitter. He's at Brian Beto. I'm at Jordan Burnfield. So we hope that you will follow along there as well. And we will talk to you again next week, hopefully after the Cubs get back on track and we can all come back off the ledge. He's Brian Beto. I'm Jordan Burnfield. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week on the B-Squared Show.